Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always so excited and looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in a field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success. Today, we will discuss ERP, what is Microsoft Dynamics 365, with our guest, Mr. Cristiano Gardini. Chris is president and owner of Turnkey Technologies, which was founded in 1984 and based out of St. Charles, Missouri. Turnkey Technologies has built its business around an exclusive focus on Microsoft Dynamics portfolio solutions, including Dynamics 365, Finance and Supply Chain, Dynamics AX, Dynamics GP, Dynamics 365 Business Central, or Dynamics NAV, and Dynamics SL and Dynamics 365 Customer Engagement. Turnkey is a Microsoft Tier 1 cloud service provider, Microsoft Dynamics Gold Level ERP and CRM licensing partner, and a National Dynamics Service Center. Turnkey offers new software sales, upgrades, implementation services, customization, data conversion, integration, training, support, business intelligence and reporting, and workflow and portals. Turnkey offers end-to-end professional services, including design, project management, implementation, application maintenance, integration services, development, analytics, training, and support services for Dynamics solutions. So in this episode, we will discuss an ERP vendor partners, that is Microsoft Dynamics, perspective on ERP organizational change in general. We will also further explore Dynamics 365. In this particular episode, Chris will share and discuss Microsoft Dynamics 365 products and what differentiators there may be relative to other ERP vendors. Chris joins us to share his perspective on what ERP is, how is success defined, what exactly is Microsoft Dynamics 365, keys to ERP project management, the role of organizational culture and leadership, Microsoft Dynamics differentiators, ERP selection tips, and more. Before we get started, it is prudent to mention that Nessel & Associates is vendor neutral. While in practice and research, we do work with ERP vendors, their partners, and specific subject matter experts every day, we currently have many ERP vendors and their partners queued up to be on our podcast. While all we consider friends and colleagues, some we may have worked with previously and some we may not have worked with previously. Nonetheless, NNA approaches ERP selection in an academic research-based way. Please contact us anytime to learn more. In our conversations with our ERP vendor colleagues, we, Nesson Associates, take a vendor-neutral approach with open-ended questions and pick the brain of our guests so that our listeners are informed and we leave it up to our listeners to reflect. Chris, thank you very much for being on the show today.
No, it's my pleasure.
So let's dive in, Chris. I know we have several questions for you, and we're really looking forward to picking your brain. The first question is, how would you define ERP?
Sure. ERP, enterprise resource planning, you know, back in the day, we called it accounting software. So if you think about the, you know, the business application space, the ERP spans more than just finance. It spans into operations. And so if you think about running the finance and the operations side of the business, enterprise resource planning, it implies a fully integrated set of applications to run the business.
So, Chris, suppose you're leading a kickoff meeting for an organization that's just starting an ERP implementation. How would you define and describe for them success in terms of ERP organizational change?
Sure. Great question. And I think as we look at replacing legacy technology or the incumbent business applications, a true measure of success is number one, is we've stopped using the legacy system. And I think moreover, the success is the staff of the organization taking ownership and really owning the application. And again, the other part of that is the outcomes. Are we actually realizing the outcomes that is the ambitions of replacing the system in the first place? So there's a couple of measures there, but certainly as an owner, you're looking for that taking ownership. Did we stop using the other system as opposed to what, one leg in one and one leg in the other? That's not success. So, and then again, the efficiency gains that you expect post the change, and again, have we accomplished those? And there should be metrics that are measured from how we did before and how we did after. So there's a few different things that'll substantiate success.
Sure. And obviously that may vary from organizational context to organizational context, but you would generally define success in terms of really taking some time to look at and understand before and after KPIs and metrics and making sure that they are at least as good or improved, and as well as making sure that you are, you know, 100% or whatever's within scope that you're off your legacy systems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're running the business on the new platform and efficiently. And it doesn't happen in the first 30 days necessarily, but, you know, again, that is the reasonable measure. You're off the old system. You're on the new platform. People are running the business with it. And again, then you refine it from that point forward.
Sure. So how would you describe your general understanding of ERP implementation success rates, just in general in the field, Chris, based on your work, anecdotal evidence of other ERP implementations and so forth? What would you say, just generally, what would be your response in terms of success rate out in practice?
You know, I don't know I have a statistic for that, but in our practice area, we have a success is the only option for us in terms of implementation. So we finish every project that we start. But that's not true for every partner because I do inherit failed implementations. So again, statistically, do 8 out of 10 succeed, but even a 20% failure rate. And again, as you go back to the reasons they fail, and a lot of times it's project management discipline, maybe it's setting scope correctly. I mean, there's a number of factors that could cause for a failure, but normally it's customer and partner flaws on both sides that cause that to fall apart. So,
yeah. And I think that's a question that would be fun for you and I to spend an hour on and just talk about that. Because you mentioned a good point, right? I mean, success rates can be low in general and failure rates high. And even if it is 20% or 75%, you know, there's some pretty sound numbers out there that provide some strong evidence as to what that number is. But, you know, at the end of the day, any failure is too much. And that could be due to a variety of reasons, for sure. So, Chris, I'd like to switch gears and talk to you a little bit about Microsoft Dynamics 365. And obviously, as we had mentioned in your introduction, in the introduction to the episode, your firm is a Microsoft Dynamics partner. So really want to share with our listeners, you know, some of the different features and functionality and differentiators with Dynamics. So you have an article on your website called, "But Really, What is Microsoft Dynamics 365? And in that, you share your thoughts on Microsoft Dynamics 365. And I believe it was through a white paper compiled by ERP software blog. But nonetheless, let me just share this really quick with our listeners. But it states that the white paper provides a much needed clarification of the evolution of Microsoft Dynamics 365 and what it means for businesses looking to modernize their technology. It defines the Microsoft Dynamics 365 product and offers a comparison between Dynamics 365 for finance and operations and Dynamics 365 Business Central. It also discusses the advantages of adopting 365 solutions and offers tips for choosing an implementation partner. So just for our listeners, I will be sure to include this link in as well as any other articles that we discuss in this conversation today in the show notes. But that was an article we found, a blog post from 2019. So we want to share with our listeners some of the questions in this article. And so the first question is, Chris, what do you like about Microsoft Dynamics 365? And just in general, why would you recommend it?
Sure. And I actually run my business on Dynamics 365, so the proof is in the pudding for me. But I like the completeness of the vision. And what that means is, again, Dynamics 365 is a platform. It's more than just a single application, and which means, and when I say completeness, there's an incremental strategy to buy what you need, and there's a lot of capability up there that you can consume. So anything from, you know, the core business applications all the way through extending it and getting artificial intelligence in there sniffing through and doing things on your behalf as well. But part of that is just completeness and the thoughtfulness in terms of the application. And as I look at the evolution of where the 365 ERP products, they both came out of the European space back in 2002 when Microsoft bought Dynamics AX and Dynamics Navision. So they're well-thought applications. And again, I love the technology platform. I love the Microsoft Cloud. So again, you get a lot of stuff that you can, the doors are all open. I think that's another way to articulate it. You're not going to run out of capability in 6 months the business changes and, well, there's an option out there for you to continue to just logically extend your solution. So that's why I like it. Again, I run my business on it. It helps us be very efficient, very effective. It allows us to innovate on top of the platform because of all the extensions into the Power Platform tools that are out these days as well. So, and it plugs into Office. So everything kind of flows together because it's living in the same place. Again, it's a very compelling stack of applications and capabilities. So
Chris, we stated for our listeners in our introduction, you know, the different, systems or platforms, Dynamics, that is, or additions. But how can a potential client choose which Dynamics 365 edition is best for them?
It's a great question. So really, we're talking about the difference between Business Central and Finance and Operations. And so Business Central, as I would articulate it, at a macro level, small, medium, okay? And then, you know, finance and operations, medium, large. And so, again, depending on your organizational size, that could be a very quick mechanism to direct you to one of the products. I mean, if you're enterprise class, meaning if you've got hundreds of users, you're going to be directed towards the enterprise class product. The challenge would be if you're a $10 million company with hundreds of users, you've got a problem because the enterprise class product, it's expensive, and I think that's it. And so there's a price budget component right away that will cause a business to look at Business Central just because they're small. Let's say if they're less than 20 million, they're probably not going to be looking at the enterprise class product. So as we're looking to differentiate between Business Central and Finance and Operations, a lot of times at a macro level, the size of the organization, the revenue, number of employees can direct us to either the Business Central, which is really small, medium-sized companies, or the Finance and Operations, which is medium-large. And I think that so revenue is a quick indicator. If you're a $20 million company, you're probably looking at the Business Central solution just because of the price and the price of implementation. Whereas if we have a large user class, and we're enterprise class, multiple locations, hundreds of users, we're certainly going to be looking at the larger solution. Now, again, there are smaller businesses that are extremely profitable that have complex requirements. I have $10 million companies looking at the finance and operations solution. The problem is, again, prices start at about $500,000 for implementation. So there's a little bit of a rub there. There's this balance between buying Business Central and adding third-party products versus buying the finance and operations and having standard functionality that does warehouse management, for example, where warehouse management is a bolt-on for the smaller solution for Business Central. So sometimes it's features, and again, at a macro level, revenue, size of the organization is going to direct just because of the overall budget to implement one of these solutions. Those are the quick ways to guide.
Got it. So, Chris, choosing the right edition or system is one thing, but what tips or advice can you share with our listeners in terms of how to choose a good Dynamics 365 partner? You know, so once you select a system or as you select the proper system, what tips can you share with our listeners as far as what to look for in a partner?
Sure. And, you know, typically the partner selection could be part of selecting the solution, meaning when you start evaluating Business Central or Finance and Operations, you really need a partner to show you the capability and actually to develop a vision and also write the scope of implementation for the project. But to that point, you know, how do you compare partners? You know, for example, methodology. We have a formal project management office, and we take methodology very seriously. And that is the process by which we conduct analysis, we do the design, the configuration, we do any development, and we take you live and operational. So again, the partner could be differentiated just by methodology alone. Okay, so then there's other factors in the partner organization. Number of years in business, financial stability, size of the staff, the competencies, the capabilities of the staff. So getting transparency into the team members that are going to actually be part of the project, interviewing them, finding out culturally if there's a fit between the partner organizations. You know, East Coast, Midwest, we're Midwestern, so we have a lot of business from Minnesota down to Texas, but so personnel fit, culture fit. References, is the partner done work in your industry? And I think, and then even to get to the point where you get to talk to customers, and doing reference checks as opposed to just getting names, to have the conversation. Find out what went good, what went bad, what would you do different? You know, and so there's a lot of due diligence steps to vet partners and all those things. Size, years in business, philosophies. So hopefully that gives you some ideas there. It's a lot of criteria.
Well, you mentioned some great points, Chris, and I think a lot of times those are significant influences on success that maybe organizations sometimes overlook or maybe are not aware of, and especially you'd mention philosophies or organizational culture, right? And methodology, and really understanding that methodology, because they vary drastically. I know for a fact, not just between ERP vendors, but just among Dynamics 365 partners even, sometimes all three of those variables alone can vary significantly. You know, I think that as what you're describing, that there's many variables that go into that, you know, that process, that's where good partner comes in and really making sure that the organization understands all those different influences and the significant impact they can have. So, Chris, whether it's in regards to the platform itself or the partner, what's one thing about Dynamics 365 that you think potential prospects or clients need to know that they sometimes miss? Is there any one thing that comes to mind that you think you often see that your clients really don't talk about, but they should?
Yeah, and I think that you know, you make a good point about user thresholds. So again, Business Central, one user or more. Okay, that's great. So that can address a small organization, but in the finance and operations, it's a minimum 20 users. So what that means is, oh, it's going to be at least $42,000 a year if I have to pay for 20 users from 42,000. So it's a very quick math exercise and to understand, and I think that's one thing. And maybe it's the extended capabilities. The other thing that people don't realize is how far the solution can go once they're on the platform, meaning the extensibility. So it's a couple things. Sure. But just those licensing thresholds is a big one to understand that can disqualify people right away. They say, I only have 7 users, but I want it. They don't want to pay for the extra 13, and there's not much forgiveness there. So, but that's a couple of points right there just to differentiate.
Sure. Yeah. You know, so Chris, I know that you're a very successful firm. You've been around for a long time, I believe, you know, 27 years or something like that. So I want to pick your brain here a little bit more on not necessarily the product itself on Dynamics 365, but on process. My first question along that lines, you know, you'd mentioned the value of methodology and you have your own PMO, your project management office internally within your firm. But from your experience implementing ERP, what would you say are the most critical aspects of ERP implementation project management? If there's just one or two things that come to mind that you can share with our listeners, what would that be?
You know, I think that scope, you know, and if you think about the onset of the project, doing an analysis where you really have the defined scope and you really flush that out at the onset. And I think one of the problems I see is the lack of discipline on the front end, meaning we have delayed discovery where you start having evidence show up throughout the life cycle of the project that's compromising. So from a project management standpoint, again, that establishment of the process, the projects, discipline, the fit gap documents, at the very onset, it really sets the tone for the entire project. And so, and if you blow, the analysis phase and we don't firm the scope up, and because in essence, once we finish analysis, the rest of the project plan is written. But that's the front end discipline. And I think the other side of project management is two-sided. Client side PM. you know, or the absence of client-side PM is compromising as well. So you really do need to have project management on the partner side, but you really need to have it on the client side as well, because it's, you think about one dimension. You know, typically the partner project management has a one-dimensional view. That's how do I manage my resources for the project. But the client-side PM and coordination is critical, as what I described about that analysis phase and really having a firm scope on the front end. Just a couple comments.
Sure. Great points. So just to dig a little deeper, and I'm just talking in general with this question, you know, not your firm specifically or any other firm or any other ERP vendor, but we all know that not all ERP projects are successful, right? As we talked about earlier in the conversation.
Yep.
But why is it, why do you think, again, just in general, that many ERP projects fail to deliver on expectations? Is it more technology? Is it a lack of business process reengineering? Is it culture? I mean, you know, you mentioned yourself the emphasis on business culture and strategy and methodology. But what is it? If you had to summarize just in a couple of sentences, what would you say is one of the main reasons that you consistently see in terms of failed or significantly challenged ERP projects?
Sure. And let's assume that they picked the correct product and that's not
great
a product
point.
Problem, but as you begin an implementation.
I'm going to interrupt, Chris. I want to interrupt
you.
That's a great assumption. you know, in my mind, and this is why, you know, NNA is vendor neutral, as we'd mentioned in the opening of this episode. The vendor selection is huge. I want to back up just for a minute. I'm going to ask you not to assume that they chose the right system. Do you think that's a major issue within organizations? Do you think a lot of ERP implementations fail? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said. The engagement with the partner pre-sales and the visioning and the scope, envisioning the scope, but it's also about the committee that's inside the organization and their adoption of the change that's about to begin at the onset, as opposed to I decided, nobody else participated, and then it shows up and, well, that's not what we need. That's not what we do. So again, you go back to having adequate representation of the company when the selection process is done to assure that there's alignment between the vision of the processes you're about to implement and what the business actually needs and does. So again, there was that assumption, but you're right. You show up and who picked this product? It doesn't work for us. There's a perfect example. It shows up and the alignment to the business processes or the requirements just isn't there. So there's a perfect example of why it would fail is you picked the wrong product or you didn't do enough due diligence and you selected it. And then you're like, oh, we have a gap. It's a huge gap. It doesn't do what we really need it. I mean, that's a big problem and that'll cause it to fail right there. And then whose fault is that? Is it the partner's fault? Is it the customer's fault because they didn't do the due diligence? As long as the partner didn't distort the capability of the solution, you follow me. So
it sounds like you're saying improper system selection is a significant issue with failed projects. But let's go back to your first assumption. Let's assume that the right choice was made and the organization went through a thorough and proper ERP selection process and they did pick the right system. What then would you say are the major, I guess, causes of ERP project failure or significant challenges?
Sure. And so the one comment on expectations, it's scope. Again, do we have the right scope in the project? You know, and then do we deliver the scope? So if we have scope defined properly, if we don't deliver on that scope, well, there's a reason to have a missed expectation. The big one is the client taking ownership of the solution. You know, you buy an ERP product, it's yours. It's yours from the first day. You know, it's like, hey, you bought a Ferrari, and if you go drive it down the highway and smash it into the medium, it's not my fault because I sold it to you. But you own the vehicle, and it's your job to learn how to drive it, configure it, maintain it, et cetera. So there's a lot of projects that fail because the staff doesn't take ownership, you know, or they wait. Oh, we'll own it when it goes live. Now you own it the first day. So taking ownership is a big deal. Again, bad scope is a big deal. Weak project management is the other one that just to effectively march people through that learning and ownership and knowledge transfer. So that's another one that could fail. There's a few points there.
So Chris, I want to just drill down a little bit further into something you mentioned earlier, and you'd mentioned organizational culture in a previous question. And you also just mentioned ownership, which I think ownership comes from it's a part of organizational culture. It's an organizational culture attribute, if you ask me, during an ERP implementation. And I know this is a loaded question, but what role does the overall corporate culture play in ERP organizational change and why?
I think that as you look at organizations that really collaborate well together and they have a common purpose, right? Not making money necessarily, but what is their purpose? And I think that that's a cultural thing, and it comes from the top. It comes from ownership through the executive team all the way down to the frontline workers. And I think that could be pervasive in a group. And so you think about the enthusiasm that a group like that would have in getting a new tool set, right? To be better at what they do, to deliver better experiences to the customers, to their workers. So, you know, that corporate culture, and if it is that type of an organization, as opposed to you got a guy at the top that's jamming it down everybody's throat, that's not the right success recipe. But the one where the organization empowers their people to make things better and to do it better, like I said, they welcome this type of organizational change, in fact. Again, sure. As opposed to a fragmented organization where leadership's really not creating vision and leading as they should be, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So true. So with your projects, and I know you've realized a great deal of success, but obviously for no project is there a crystal ball or a magic wand, but what challenges do you most often face as you or your firm implement ERP? And are those the same issues across different organizations, or do the actual issues and your amplitude vary by project, right? So is it kind of the same set of different issues from organization to organization? It's just that the amplitude of a particular issue varies, or what? What's your thoughts on that? What do you most often see?
I think it's people. I mean, The biggest risk in projects is people, meaning, you know, when we sell an ERP project, one thing that, you know, we always do the ha-has, can we do an assessment on their staff? Can we test these people? Because again, we make benign assumptions that number one, they have the time to commit, they will commit, they have the discipline to commit, that they have the aptitude to absorb this, learn it. And if you think about a lot of times we're introducing change into an organization and these people have been using the same system and they've never gone through an implementation and maybe they haven't been in school in a long time and all of a sudden there's this expectation that they're going to consume this knowledge and turn around and know how to use it. So, and that's across anybody that's doing a project. So the human element, and we run into organizations where, wow, they got their act together and they're on it and they're more efficient and they actually beat the budget, and then you got the opposite there. But I think that that's still one of those challenges, and it's the people side. I mean, the PM discipline's great, but people, if the team doesn't show up or the team that shows up, they can't perform. That's compromising. And it's not all organizations, but the challenging ones, it's typically a people challenge where, you know, in a lot of organizations, oh, we're going to hire somebody to run the project. So they already recognize that they don't have a champion. But there is a need for champions to emerge as you go through a project like this. And I would just say that it's people, and I think it's everybody. And every partner, if you ask them, they say, yeah, you're right. Meaning, oh, the project manager on their side didn't have the discipline. That's a problem. Person's not getting the material. They're not learning it fast enough. Okay, again, I come back to people. And so, how do you mitigate that? I guess that's the other part of your question. How do you mitigate it? A lot more emphasis on the front end. A lot more emphasis on defining the team and evaluating the team, and not that we want to unsell the project and the guy for the owner to recognize, oh, I don't have the staff to do this. I guess I just won't do it because we want the transaction, but we want to make sure that we're preparing for success. So it really is a little different conversation on the front end and even pre-sales where we start identifying the candidates or the organizational team members. And if they have to hire somebody, maybe we can help them do that. But that's how we've mitigated. We really put a lot more emphasis on that on the front end of the project and the explanation of how do you develop champions and are they already in the building, right? Maybe you don't know that it's a champion, but it still is people-centric and it's just a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's such a great point, Chris. You know, sometimes when you front load the project and you take the time to be prepared and to create the readiness, right, and to be very honest and transparent about the realities of the expectations and the expectations of the project, that pays dividends later on, you know, in the process. You know, there's a difference between paralysis by analysis versus being prepared and doing things right. You make a good point. You take a little bit of time, money, and effort on the front end to align and to align the culture and to set the expectations, and that pays dividends. And, you know, and like you mentioned, it sounds like you're saying that technology, assuming you made the right selection, is typically not the issue. The project management, that tactical piece of project management is absolutely critical, right? I mean, that from scope control to change management to the way you run your meetings and that sort of thing. The project management piece is absolutely critical. But back to the culture and the people thing, I mean, you just mentioned in your response, you referred to training or L&D, learning and development, change acceptance, champions, all of that, what you described is they're really attributes of organizational culture. And I agree. Yeah, a lot of that is explaining that to the organization on the front end of a project, you know, pays dividends. So I'm going to ask, I think maybe a bit of a similar question, but in a different way from what I've already asked. But when you go through an ERP organizational change process, Chris, are there even any conflicts between stakeholder groups, or is it more typically everybody is kumbaya and happy?
It, you know, it's not always kumbaya. I mean, the goal is to get it to kumbaya, but frankly, you know, you go back to who was involved in the decision process, and then, you know, if there's stakeholders that show up late to the party, there could be some rubs there, meaning because their voices weren't incorporated into that. But normally it's that, and or you may have a rigid individual in the organization that wants to plant their feet and doesn't want to go along with change, or says, I'm going to retire before we change. And, you know, and those are leadership challenges where the organization has to reevaluate their personnel. But normally people get on board, but it really is if the executive team and the leadership team is on board, normally everybody will follow. So you really need that adoption from the top down. And then most of the troops typically will follow and get into the kumbaya. And again, the reassurance from management that people will be trained, that their position will move forward. Positions are going to change, though. So people have to be open to see their roles change, because that's the way you did it before is not how you're going to do it now. And as long as there's an openness in that culture, then normally it is kumbaya.
That's an insightful answer and obviously something we could talk more about. But you did mention in that answer, you mentioned leadership. And then also, you know, when you talk about culture, it's hard to talk about culture and setting the tone without talking about leadership. But what would you say are the leadership styles or attributes are most prevalent during the best of your ERP implementation experiences? So if it's possible, and it may not be, but if you just think and reflect for a second on your best of the best implementations that you've had, and you think of the leadership team, are there any general common denominators or attributes within that leadership team?
Yeah, and I think that there's a few things that I'll mention, and one is leader participation. Okay, so, you know, even for the top level executives to participate in some of workshops on the front end of the process where they're really doing analysis and scoping. So number one, that engagement from leadership is important. I think the openness, and again, for leaderships to state openly that, hey, this is about change. We are going to change. We are going to change processes. We are going to change systems. We are going to adjust people's roles. And so again, for leadership to be very open and to describe the change process. And like I said, I think those are a couple of huge attributes, and confidence. You got to have leadership that's confident, that's optimistic, because if it's the naysayer leader, he's going to bring everybody down. You know, if the sky is falling, no, we're going to make it. This is going to be great. We're going to get to this. And so even that confidence and that optimistic attitude and vision creation of a better place on the other side, you'll inspire your people. So again, you think about leaders being inspiring as opposed to blah. Those are big attributes, that openness, that inspiring and in confidence, and then even the participation. Well, that takes it a long way. So if the top guy is not showing up, or even the CFO is not showing up, and he's going, we'll let somebody else handle it, it really shows a lack of engagement at the key level. And those are imperative in my opinion. And anyway.
That's interesting because, you know, there's, without getting into all the details, this is a topic for another episode, but, you know, there's many, leadership has been categorized into many different leadership types or attributes, and these different attributes combined create a leadership type. And what you just described for me, I would say in that fairly short description, but you hit on some key words that would tell me that the leaderships are very transformational. They're good at inspiring. You know, they're good at, you know, hey, look, they're not transactional. You know, when you go through a ERP implementation, to think that you're going to go from A to B to C to D and everything's going to be perfect each step of the way is probably a falsehood. So you have to think about it. Look, we accept the issues. We know there's going to be issues. There's realities. They kind of plan ahead. They inspire. And so it's interesting because I would say you're definitely heading down the road of explaining to me. If we were to talk another half hour on that, I think you're probably describing transformational leadership.
I would agree. That term sums it up. So you're absolutely right.
So Chris, on your website, and again, you know, I know you and your team have been quite successful. You've been around for a long time, and that's a significant proof in the pudding. You know, you have some great clients and references, but you state on your website, quote, "We invest time to define client requirements and objectives as part of every engagement and customer relationship, enabling us to become an extension of your team. We apply proven best practices, allowing you to expand your vision while managing the risk so you can achieve your goals no matter where you are on your digital transformation journey." So Can you share a tidbit of your success? Can you give an example of one of your quote-unquote proven best practices for our listeners?
Sure. A couple examples in that front-end statement is you think about engagement and discovery and visioning and solutioning, and we play the Missouri thing, like, you know, the show me, we want to show you. And I think that is we get that alignment in the early portion of the process. And again, I got a lot of accountants who work for me. I came out of a CPA firm as a technical guy. So we're looking at best practices around business process automation. What's an example of a proven best practices? I really think it's just as we engage on the front end and really flush out requirements around all of the different accounting business processes. And the integrity on those processes is part of that as well. We're not in there one-offing stuff and modifying systems to achieve a non-standard or a non-compliant transaction output. But I think that said, the best practices are embedded in every business process that we articulate for a customer. And again, the engagement, you know, the front-end engagement, that's our best practice. We came up with a methodology in pre-sales engagement, envisioning and solutioning, and even getting to the point where we do prepared presentations with clients' data. So that's a best practice that we deliver because we feel it delivers the best visibility of the outcomes that we're contractually agreeing to. So that's a best practice. There's other best practices in terms of implementation methodology, but just overall, business processes that we implement conform to best practices. So we're not, like I said, we're not going non-standard in any of that stuff. It may be a glove fit to the customer, but it's still going to be a best practice at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, that leads me to a whole bunch of other questions, but we'll save that for another time. But that's great. So, Chris, I just want to ask you, it's really the same exact question that we have asked or are asking all of our ERP-specific guests, right? So whether it's a partner, implementer, value-added reseller, or specific ERP vendor, and that is with so many options, right? With so many ERP options, as you know, I think just in discrete manufacturing alone, there's nearly 100 ERP vendors in that space. And, you know, I'm talking from tier one to niche players.
Sure.
There's so many marketing and sales approaches, and many organizations have never been through an ERP selection previously. So how, and I'm going to ask you like three questions in a row, so bear with me, and then you respond how you like. But how can organizations focus on looking at the true differentiators with ERP vendors? We tell people and our clients all the time that during the sales pitch, you often can swap logos on the same sales deck and leave the rest, and they all seem to say the same thing. And sometimes that can be pretty confusing for our clients. But what do you say? What are some of the things to consider when trying to understand the true differentiators between ERP options during the selection process?
Sure. And if we focus on the product aspect of it, you're trying to get a short list, okay? You don't want to look at 20 solutions, but, you know, how do you get to a short list of solutions you should consider for your industry? A lot of it's based on vendor. You know, again, I start at the top with Microsoft, and, you know, that provides a lot of confidence because of that. So sometimes it's a vendor play, but also if you look at peers in your industry to come up with a short list, okay, great. So I came up with three products. I'm going to compare Microsoft Dynamics, and let's throw NetSuite out there, and maybe Sage is out there. And so let's say you found three that support discrete manufacturing that have a good sized client base. So that's the other thing is I don't want a product that's just got a few customers that only has one partner because, again, we want serviceability. So, but let's say we get to the point where we've identified three candidate products. The due diligence, and again, empirical evidence, you know, as opposed to bias, meaning somebody's got to have a scorecard by product where, hey, we need these processes to be supported in the new solution. Maybe there's also some future business process needs that are not present today that need to be part of that collection. So objectively, to score these different solutions, and again, what else gets scored? Is it hosted? What's the pricing? Right? So we're just product-centric at this point, but very strong due diligence, and then even visualizing those business processes to make sure that, great, these three products, they all check the boxes. Where are the differentiators? Okay, is there a first, second, third based on completeness of the solution? But then again, getting into that and scoring it. You get teams of people that watch presentations and score them. Take the data down. Don't say, well, what'd you think? Oh, okay. Again, we want to be quantitative. If you've got companies that prepare for this, if they run the selection process themselves, someone has to take ownership, create an Excel spreadsheet with the columns and get different, you know, stakeholders in the organization to witness the presentations and go through some scoring. So that's one way to kind of sort them out. And some of them may shine as a winner, but hey, I really like this one. This one didn't look user-friendly. And then you move on to the partner component of the evaluation. And there's probably a partner representing that, but if you're looking for Dynamics, how do you pick the partner that shows you that product? So you're doing due diligence on the partner. Years in business, size of the organization, success in your industry, success in general, you know, case studies, publicly available information where you can really evaluate the partner organizations. And then as you get into that, it's the same thing. You're evaluating the partner with a scorecard as well. How did you like the people? What were their personalities like? What was their expertise? How well did they react to impromptu questions? So again, I'm back to objective criteria.
Yeah.
I don't like bias and I don't like soft, gushy stuff. So there's a few things I've said there, but you're right, the slide deck, but you got to get quantitative in evaluating things. There's a lot of good resources out there, but normally somebody in your business is going to have to create a list of business processes that you need in your organization. It starts there, unless you get a third-party selection firm. And what's the third-party selection firm do? Well, they're the ones that help you make the short list, and they're the ones that make the scorecard, and then they run the demos. So whether you do that yourself or you get somebody externally, but again, it's about having quantitative data to make the decisions as opposed to subjective, soft feelings, I would say.
I love the answer, Chris. Thanks. That's so true, and that happens to be what Nestle & Associates does. We choose to be vendor neutral and objective. And that's not to say that we don't have many partners in the ERP space, but I think that the idea of being very objective and unbiased in your approach to ERP selection is absolutely critical. That's very insightful. Again, on that question alone, we could spend an hour, but in the interest of picking your brain and gaining some more insight, we'll continue. Chris, as you know, Nestle & Associates, and I personally study ERP vendors and their partners and their methodologies literally for a living. So bear with me because I do want to share more information from your website. And, you know, Turnkey stated in an article called Rapid Time to Value that, quote, better business processes make for happier customers and all employees, and they also help facilitate your ROI, your return on investment. Working with Turnkey, you'll get a clear path to your ROI through clearly defined metrics, which you've talked about a little bit, Chris, that are aligned to your goals. With over 25 years of ERP implementation experience, and I think that's more like 27 years now, we apply our passion in business process optimization through solution configuration, integrations, and easy-to-manage customizations that map your solution to your specific needs while remaining cost-effective. Every software implementation we deliver follows a streamlined and collaborative approach, aligning all stakeholders and ensuring transparency throughout each and every project, which you've also mentioned so far in this conversation, Chris. And then the article continues, we'll guide you through each step of the process so you can understand what to expect as we get you up and running on your new solution. I studied different vendors and their sites and their methodology and really trying to understand because, as you yourself mentioned, that can be a true differentiator, right, is the approach. So can you just, maybe even briefly from a high level, can you walk our listeners through how you tactically accomplish that objective that you stated on your website?
Sure. So part of it starts with scope definition, and really the collection of business processes and scope, and even to calculate ROI. You know, we've got some key processes that may just be broken, and so it's easy to gather some metrics, meaning I had somebody tell me it takes 20 minutes for me to generate an invoice. Oh my gosh. Okay. So we can write that down. How many invoices do you do a month? 100. Great. We've got a metric there. There's other examples of that. Maybe there's an AP automation need where we're going to end up with a scanning solution. I saw one the other day, you email a PDF and the system just consumes it, eats it, and it's in there. It's like, wow, talk about collapsing effort. So there's a couple of examples where, you know, there may be processes that are really challenged, or there may be incapabilities that just surface where there's a revenue stream that shows up because we have a new technology we can integrate into. Beyond that, the methodology. So we go back to having scope and having that, and we have a full transparency to the methodology all the way through the entire life cycle of the project. So we can give the customers the vision of what's happening at which stage, you know, from the analysis to, hey, here's your first conference room pilot, here's your second one, here's your third one. And so they really have an expectation of what readiness they need to have to get to that point, but it's predictable. I mean, I think that's the thing, as you look at delivering accountability through methodology, but that's how we do it. I mean, it really is that discipline. And I shrunk down the footprint. Again, I'm the guy that wants to be efficient, and I don't like bloat and overhead. So we've squeezed this, and even behind the scenes, I use a Microsoft project file that's very detailed, 1,300 lines project plan for an ERP implementation. And we also use, you know, Dynamics Finance and Operations. So I have a 6-level work breakdown structure in my ERP system to help me manage delivery. So it's all those things coming together where we're doing that front end, and we're gathering some key metrics on the front end about inefficiencies and processes. So on the backside, we can come back and compare it and say, here, this we did establish and we did exceed the expectation on performance. And the methodology guides us to that outcome. So it really does work very, very well. And it didn't work that way 26 years ago, maybe, but, you know, 27 years later, we're still getting better at it, is what I would say. So,
sure. Well, Chris, I want to, and I really appreciate your time. This is a great conversation. It's hard to believe that it's already been 45 minutes or so, but I have a few more questions here I'd like to share with our listeners and get your input. Earlier, you talked a little bit about proven best practices, and I think you alluded to the idea of, you know, sometimes there's industry-specific best practices as well that's supported by Dynamics, right? But I think with that, there's a line between getting the organization to use these proven best practices, you know, industry best practices, for instance, and industry best practices in terms of business processes, of course. But you mentioned in another article, or I should say Turnkey had an article where you said, quote, Microsoft Dynamics business solutions are flexible and come well equipped out of the box to deliver the comprehensive functionality most businesses need, i.e. you're supporting industry best practice. However, many companies desire customizations or integration with applications to meet unique business requirements and optimize daily workloads. I think you know as well as I do that there's a lot of, or the best practices serve a purpose, and they are best practices because they work and are successful with many organizations, but yet many organizations are unique. So it often does require customizations to fit their unique business needs to a certain degree. But my question for you is this, is there a line you draw in terms of customizations? If a customer wants to implement Dynamics out of the box and next thing you know, 20% or more or 15% or whatever that number is, turns out to be going to require customizations, isn't there a line there? And what would you say about that?
Yeah, there is. There's a line, and I think it tends to be violating a best practice or a gap rule. So we certainly don't want to create a system that lacks integrity and is not auditable. But the architecture has evolved, and again, with cloud-based applications, and this architecture does support customization. So, but we would argue, the solution architect would argue, there may be a business process that accomplishes the end result. But in the end, some customers may demand that, no, it has to be just like this. So, okay, there's typically a cost to that, but the architecture supports customization such that you don't compromise your upgrades or your maintenance. Now, in the past, when you had on-premise systems, oh, we hated to customize because it's almost like driving a nail in the coffin and you can't upgrade. You're stuck on a version forever. The architecture today supports that. That said, we don't want to see people damage the credibility or the integrity of the system. So that's really where we draw the line. If we say, hey, no, this is compromising, you can't do this. So that's where we draw the line. But otherwise, we rationalize it. Integrations, we completely believe in integrations. But again, you're still business process. We're still doing through the business logic, where even in the old days in on-prem systems, people could inject data into the back office system. You can't do that in our Microsoft Cloud apps. SOC 2 compliance. You have that in these applications because the IT guy can't get to a SQL server. Okay, perfect. So different techniques for getting data out, but the point is even integrating data, it's going through the business process framework, which means it's validated based on all the business logic, which means you can't inject garbage into the system. Maybe it's a bad journal entry, but it balances. It'll still take it. So, you know, there's something.
Yeah,
but
right.
To that point, you know, the line is just you rationalize it, and some people will back off because of the cost of it. But if there's a business case and there's an ROI to put a gap customization in there, absolutely, we're ambitious about that. But to your point, if we're doing 5% customizations, a lot of it's forms, a lot of it's integration work. We're not building 30% functionality in the system. That would go back and tell you that you picked the wrong product, frankly, if you're doing that much customization.
Okay. Right. So, got it. So, since this podcast is all about learning and sharing with others, I'd like to share with our listeners and pick your brain how you would accomplish this objective. Again, from your website, quote, technology can only make an impact in your organization if it's put to work. Turnkey will ensure you not only understand how to use your software's features, but that it becomes a standard in your operations and loved by your people. Training costs should not be a barrier to achieving your goals. That's why we offer high-value training courses at an affordable rate. Our fully equipped, hands-on Microsoft Dynamics Training Center in St. Louis provides a collaborative and effective learning environment for our clients. So, Chris, as a tactical and practical matter, how do you accomplish this? Can you just describe for our listeners a little bit more about your learning environment, or I should say effective learning?
Sure.
And how you think about that?
Yeah, learning management's a big topic, and I think as we look at user adoption, and to that point, is how do you get them to love it? The more they understand it, the more they'll love it, and because it becomes easier to operate. So it's iterative, and I think that we have a training facility in St. Louis in the building here, but not everybody's traveling, but we do have people travel. Part of the advantage of an offsite training facility is focus. So we do have people from out of town come in and use the facility because they want focus. Through the implementation methodology, learning and knowledge transfer is happening from the onset of the project. So we've actually changed, and as part of the methodology, the users are getting their hands on this thing in the second phase of the project, which means as opposed to waiting until right before go live where they start touching the system. So part of that is engagement with the operators, hands on the keyboards during the conference room pilot 1, 2, and 3. And that's one of the techniques that's worked very well. But then there's also the retraining. And as we talk about learning management and how do we document business processes such that when a new user shows up, they have a learning guide that's really follows them through the business processes in the system. You know, Dynamics 365 F&O has a task recorder, which will give a user a click-by-click navigation on how to execute a process. It supports them. It's a sustainability play. So there's a bunch of factors. You know, there's the one-on-one, there's the group setting sessions, there's the conference through pilot sessions where people are learning business process execution in these systems over and over and over. So we've actually moved a little bit as opposed to just the classroom. We still do the classroom settings, but in the implementation methodology, there's a lot more hands-on training and knowledge transfer occurring from earlier in the project. And that's how we ensure that success, because if they show up at a week before go live to learn how to use it, you're not going to get there, and they're not going to be comfortable, and they're not going to be efficient. And inefficiency leads to bad morale, I guarantee you. So again, yeah, the better they learn the tool, the more easy it is to use, they're going to love it. I think that's it. People really, the frustration comes when they just don't understand. There's just a lack of knowledge. And so technique, it's all about technique. It's how do you get these people to learn, and whether you spoonful them. It's not big, long, five-day sessions. It's iterative. So there's incremental learning. Yeah. So that technique has changed for us as well to get better effectiveness. And again, they have to own it. That's another piece. They got to own it on the front end. If they own it and they learn it and they love it, well, then they're going to help their coworkers too, and it just propagates success within the organization. So, even the learning tools, how do we do business process documentation so that they can self-learn and continue to practice or refine their understanding of a process? So we're putting tools out there to do that as well.
It's an ongoing discussion. Yeah. Inefficiency leads to bad morale. That's so true. There's a big difference between an ERP implementation and an effective and efficient ERP implementation, right? At the end of the day, you may realize success, but there's a huge difference in time, money, and effort for one that's efficient and effective versus one that's just not being efficient. That's a great point. It can create, you know, morale issues at the end of the day. That's great insight. So Chris, I want to ask you a little bit about technology here with the Microsoft Dynamics 365 platform. Where are they heading in terms of emerging technology? Perhaps maybe share with our listeners some of your article. I thought it was an interesting article, AI and Mixed Reality and Microsoft Dynamics 365. And again, for our listeners, we'll share this in our show notes. But what do you see happening in terms of emerging technologies within the platform?
You know, it's interesting to watch, you know, accounting software, right? The evolution and technology behind the scenes. But, you know, the AI is a big one. And because the stuff lives in the Microsoft's Azure cloud, and they've got all the Azure analytics, and they got all the cognitive services up there, they've connected it all. And I mean, it's exciting. I mean, I tell people that I've watched technology grow up, and to have artificial intelligence scrubbing your financial data or your project management data to give you suggestions on things you didn't think about. I mean, again, they've exposed and given artificial intelligence access to your marketing data, your sales data, your ERP data. And, you know, it's just a matter of customers saying, yeah, I want cognitive services engaged in my business to, you know, to help me tell me, hey, you should call this guy because he's ready to buy something. It's like, I didn't know that. I called him and that was an AI, you know, AI recommended. That is game changing, because if you think about, you know, the way we work today is a human has to look at something and take action. Well, guess what? Bots and automation are supplementing humans in a very efficient, effective way. And so that's changing. And I think that it gives people pause as they think, okay, what's it going to be like in 3 years? Is there going to be a bot in my warehouse picking, packing, and shipping? Could be. Depends on the degree of automation. You could have bots. We've got bots that we've built on customer service portals. Again, hey, how are you today? And they learn. But I think that's the other part of this is the learning. My guy wrote a Power App, and he emailed a document to D365F&O, and a Power App picked up the document and read it and created an invoice. So AI is in there because AI is learning the document. So for every vendor that sends you an invoice via PDF, the little AI is in there learning, getting smarter, and that's That's continuous. It doesn't stop. And so that's game-changing, in my opinion. It's hard to imagine what we're going to see in a few years. And I even had an example in the medical space. Why don't they have bots reading x-rays and films? Why do they got humans looking at that stuff? Because I think the automation and AI, even around medical, is going to come into play where, right? Now, but again, we're talking about ERP and the fact that we've got AI looking at ERP data and helping us. I love it. And I think it's profound. And it's going to give business owners a whole lot more than they're going to get out of. It's not to demean the individuals on the staff, but AI is going to learn a lot more and faster and has a whole lot more muscle behind it than most people do. So that's the big one right there. It really is the big one. So.
Yeah. You know, and Chris, I think we're actually working on a panel. We get a lot of questions from our clients along the lines of emerging technology and its impact on ERP implementations. And you're right. You mentioned yourself just now that it's quote unquote profound and quote unquote fascinating. And I agree. And for me, it's interesting because when you look at ERP, people often refer to, and we call it the triad here, right, with ERP organizational change, the people, processes, and technology. Well, what is that emerging technology piece of it? So that technology part of that triad, how's that going to impact the other two? And how's it going to contribute to ERP implementation success? And I think it's a real significant question, and I think it's amazing. I'm just giving you a heads up. At some point here down the road, we may have you come back and sit at the table with us on a panel and just spend some time with us talking about emerging technologies specifically. So,
more than happy.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that. So, you know, one of the things, Chris, that we tell our clients all the time, and I really think it helps put things in perspective. Well, first of all, the second to the people is business intelligence. At the end of the day, it's about business intelligence, right? And it's about understanding where the dollars are. And whether you're a nonprofit or a, you know, Fortune 100 or a private organization or a nonprofit, you know, whatever the case may be, at the end of the day, you have to manage your dollars, and ERP transactions are dollars, right? It's either the transfer of a dollar or the transformation of the dollar from the time you receive a shipment to the time you ship and everything in between. And having that accuracy of where those dollars are at and where your inventory is at has everything to do with business intelligence. So really, at the end of the day, ERP is about business intelligence. You had a nice article, and actually, let me share this quote first. The article was called Self-Service Analytics, Exploring Your ERP Data for Maximum Insights. And I thought you had a really good quote here and a good point, and that is, quote, in the era of digital transformation, our jobs are overflowing with data like never before. And that's a good thing, because more data improves decision-making. But it's also intimidating, because our systems and our lives can become so saturated in that data, it is difficult to manage. Many professionals get overwhelmed with spending too much time manually building reports or digging up insights while trying to keep up with the day-to-day tasks. It does not have to be that way. Tell me more, Chris. Tell our listeners more.
It doesn't have to be that way. And if we think about efficiency, you know, reformulating data, retransport, you know, my Excel spreadsheet, right? It's obsolete a minute after I loaded all the data in there. And so these manual refreshes have a huge burden on people's work capacity. And so what we premise is we can create refreshable business intelligence consumption vehicles. Again, whether that's a Power BI dashboard or whatever it may be, but to have the refreshable data where we look at the back end data, we look at the composition of that data, we look at the formulas, the calculations, and we compose that so that you open it up, you hit refresh, and guess what? Whether it's coming from your ERP system and your CRM and creating a composite, but it's just that simple to get away from where you're manually composing data over and over again and get it to the point where we've identified that, hey, this should be refreshable because we need it all the time and lots of people need it. And once it gets into that state, it's self-serve. Well, I can push it out there and let lots of different constituents use that data. But if I'm having to manually compose it, but what we gain from doing that is we recover all of that labor we've spent composing data into manually. And that's over and over again. And to have the data right now and right there, and then we can compose it a lot of ways. Let's start with a graph. I got a high level. Hey, red is good. Green is good. Red is bad. Let's click on red. Oh, what's behind the red? And see the details.
Yeah.
Where now all of a sudden we're even summarizing it so that we can consume it and make decisions a little bit more effectively without having to blur through all of the lines and lines of data. So we want to click and get down to that. But that's the point, is we can create refreshable business intelligence objects that can be consumed by any members of the organization or people outside the organization. You know, for example, a great example is I tell, give your vendor a little Power BI report that shows his shipping performance so that he can self-improve. Imagine him having a report card and it's like it's brown. Oh, I got to get into the yellow so I can get to green. But there's an example how you can expose real-time data on one vendor's shipping performance and you hope that you get it. It's an interesting example. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, Chris, man, it's been a fun conversation, and I think literally we could take any one of these questions and create an hour or two conversation on each one of these. So thank you so much for your time. But I do have one more question, and unfortunately, our co-host Jonathan is not with us today on this episode. But I know for him and I both, this is one of our favorite questions because, again, we love to share and learn from others. So if you had to distill down all of your experience, your expertise, research, you know, your great successes and challenges that you've had in developing your firm, but if you had to distill that down into a couple of sentences or maybe a paragraph of advice for our listeners, what would you say? What do you want to share with our listeners in terms of ERP organizational change?
Sure. And I think the due diligence on the front end of the process were, you know, why are we doing this? You know, we always actually, what are the change drivers? And to have a notion of what are the outcomes? What are the outcomes that I want as an owner, as an organization with a replacement of a system? And let that guide, you know, the evaluation of the solution to make sure that it does deliver on that expectation. I think that's, and then as you move through the process, see it. Don't just assume, see it. Get people involved, really do the due diligence on the front end. And then again, what that turns into is a very detailed scope of what you're contracting for your first phase of your implementation. I think the due diligence on the front end in visualizing the solution and really kicking the tires, we've spent a year with one client. We still haven't signed a contract yet. So there's a lot of due diligence that we continue to perform. But those are great examples. And I think if an organization takes that approach to evaluating an ERP solution and really visioning the outcomes and saying, all right, these things are going to help us drive our business growth. And then again, the implementation is guided towards realizing those outcomes. That's it.
That's great insight, Chris. And I'm going to borrow that quote again. This one quote we could talk for an hour about because I think it's such an important idea. And that is what you just said. Don't assume it, see it. Don't just assume, see it. And I think a lot of organizations do just that. There's a lot of assumptions that are made throughout the entire life cycle of an ERP project. And I think that's a pretty loaded piece of advice right there that we'll have to talk about again. So, Chris, thank you so much for your time. Fun conversation. Be well and continued success to you and your team.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Please join us in our next episode, Optimized ERP with Mr. Greg Shoemaker. Greg is principal at Business Performance Integrated. Business Performance Integrated is a consultancy focused on assisting small to mid-sized companies develop business strategies to integrate critical processes, data, and systems along with business intelligence to improve business performance and optimize capacity. Please join us again next week.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.